All right. Good afternoon, everybody. It's just a few minutes before 2 o'clock Eastern Time on June 29th. Okay. Well, I was about 8 minutes into an audio announcement on Canvas, and Canvas just did that thing that it does, and it ate itself on me. But that's okay. We're going to do what I should have done in the first place, which is use Audacity. So I do have a couple of things I want to say as far as kind of announcements before I get into this very short podcast. This one, by the way, is going to be on the Vincent Miller reading, Chapter 1, Key Elements of Digital Media in Understanding Digital Culture. This announcement and all the other announcements I send out should be open for comments. So if you ever have a question, comment, anything that I ask you that you want to respond to, in the announcement, please feel free to reply, and I will, and others can see it, and then we can kind of have another conversation there that is related to what, you know, the content of the announcement. So keep that in mind, and if you have trouble accessing that, let me know. The other thing is, to keep this listenable, I'm going to keep these my coverage of the Vincent Miller chapter short in these small chunks. I would probably guess that out of all the readings for the intro module, this one was the most difficult or most challenging for many of you. There are several reasons for that, I think, and we'll talk about that here in just a moment. But I want to stress that this chapter is incredibly important as far as giving us a kind of a common vocabulary for the rest of the seminar for thinking about a lot of these issues. One of the things that you're going to soon learn, if you haven't already, is that when we talk about issues of digital culture, digital media, the web, social media, these terms are really important. The words that we use matter, as Caroline Jack says in her piece, Lexicon of Lies. And in ordinary usage, people tend to use these very same terms in a rather casual way. And so I just want, and I think one of the several things that I think may have given you some fits with the reading, and it's fine, I mean, this is a challenging reading, is the fact that, he's using a lot of kind of insider scholarly terminology in a very precise way. But it gives us that vocabulary. It also gives us a key set of concepts that we can keep referring back to going forward. So it's a very important reading. One of the other things about this, I think probably what presents the largest challenge of the Miller reading, is that because what he's trying to do, and I think succeeds in this entire book, is to provide a really zoomed out kind of comprehensive view of the contemporary conversation and discourse on digital culture and digital media at the time that this was written, which was 2011, and as I said, this is getting a few years on it, but it's still incredibly good at what it does. Okay, so that's why we're using it as our text. In order to have that kind of zoomed out view, Miller has to glide over a number of really key concepts discourses and conversations, scholarly conversations, that if you're unfamiliar with this territory, you know, you're kind of left in the dark. And he assumes a certain kind of base level knowledge of that I think is fair to say that not all of us have, and you know, nor should we be expected to have, okay? Having said that, you know, that's another reason why active reading is so important, and that you're looking these unfamiliar terms up using, you know, credible online sources. I'll give a shout out here to the Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy, the SEP. You've probably seen me link to a few of their pieces in various media that I've sent out already. That's an excellent resource for any of those kind of sticky philosophical / critical theory terms that you come across. I'll give you an example. Things like ideology, you know, epistemology, ontology, right? All those ologies, humanism, right? These terms that, again, scholars will use in a very offhand, kind of casual way. They don't bother explaining it. and then you're you know kind of left going, well, how do I? That's, you know, Wikipedia again is an excellent resource for this kind of reading supplement, for this kind of reading support. It's not, you know, again, as we tell students, it doesn't have a reputation as a sort of credible research resource yet, although that is kind of changing. But as a reading resource, Wikipedia is really good at giving you a just enough information in a quick period of time that you can kind of pick up and carry on. I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about from the reading. On just early in the chapter, a couple of pages in, he mentions the Marxist theory of base and superstructure. Well, if you haven't encountered that, if you haven't had a class on this sort of thing, if you haven't read Marx, you're not going to understand what that means. And if you go on the internet, you're going to find a lot of stuff on it, but how do you know if that stuff is valid? How do you know if it's credible? Can it be trusted? And so forth and so on. So those are two good resources that you can use. And hey, I am also a resource. Please ask me. I love getting these kinds of content questions. Don't be afraid to ask questions. So here, really quickly, I'll just kind of set this reading up now that I've talked about how hard it is. But again, it is very well researched and it is very comprehensive in what it's trying to accomplish. But in the first opening pages, he talks about that really important distinction between the sort of traditional broadcast model of media and the contemporary internet model of media. And this is a really a macro kind of zoomed out idea, but the basic idea is that in 1970, right, you know, insert date here, there were five channels on television. They were owned by major, you know, networks/corporations. There was no internet. There was a local newspaper. There was a church newsletter, right? I mean, you know, this is how information was disseminated circa not that long ago, all right? 1970 was what? Not quite 50 years ago, I guess. So not that long ago, not quite a half century. Now, today, anyone can be a producer of content for this thing we call the web, right? And of course, social media and its more recent contributions to this whole network of information, videos, and so forth. I mean, what I'm doing right now, right, by just creating this bit of content for this online class, such a thing 15 years ago would have required a frustrating level of technological support to accomplish. This can be accomplished really with great ease, right? So, you know, But that's kind of not the point of this distinction. The point of this distinction is to show how radically the very structure of media shifted in the last half century from a model where the line of communication was really one way, right? And that's what that model on page 13 is meant to show. That it's a really a one-way model of communication. NBC or ABC or CBS or whomever creates the content. They're the ones who were in charge of everything from the conception of the idea to the production of the show, etc. And then it gets disseminated out via the magic of television into your living room, right? You know, so few senders, many receivers, largely a one-way operation. You don't get to create content for CBS. At the very most, you can, I suppose, write, you know, as a regular citizen, you know, you write a letter and say, hey, you know, why don't you put the Honeymooners back on the air or whatever. Okay, so fast forward to a situation that we have today, circa 2019, where, again, any sort of digital media or web or social media user is kind of always already both a consumer and a producer of that media. In fact, I mean, you know, one of the things that makes the web so amazing and kind of diverse is that it's not this corporate-controlled phenomenon, by and large. There are corporations that have a presence on the web, but their presence is sort of right alongside yours and mine. At least that's the current situation, pending this whole larger legal discussion over net neutrality, but I'm not going to get into that right this minute. Google it, read about it, on Wikipedia. But this is a fundamental shift, okay? And that's what this is getting at in these early pages. I mean, he's using Mark Poster as well as a guy by the name of Lev Manovich, who are two, as you might imagine, two pretty key thinkers in this whole digital media discussion. Okay, then he gives you basically on page 14 the plan for the rest of this chapter. He says, look, we're going to talk about something, we're going to talk about digital media and what that is. That is not one term among others. How do we, you know, what do we mean by digital media? What do we mean by new media? We talk about media in module one in this course, in the little intro that I wrote. But what do we mean by digital? That just means ones and zeros or having kind of separate pieces. So what, you know, what is this whole notion of digital media? How is it different from print or traditional media? And that has been a preoccupation of scholars in this area for at least the last two decades. And what Miller does, which I think is smart, is he breaks down the rest of the chapter into three sections. Each of these sections corresponds to a different way that he's going to talk about digital media. The first is technical processes. The second is cultural form. And the third is immersive experience. I'm on page 14, by the way. He says, technical processes refer to the technological building blocks of digital media. In other words, you know, he's going to talk about digital and what that means, networked, interactive, and what we mean by these terms. Hypertext, which is, you know, one of the affordances of digital media that print media does not provide, that we often overlook. All right, cultural forms refers to the ways in which digital media objects are created, encountered, and used. And then finally, immersive experience, which refers to the environments that are created by digital media. So being enmeshed in digital media is, you know, scholars will argue, a fundamentally different experience in a lot of respects than you know, traditional print media. And so we're going to learn about what makes that so in the rest of this chapter. I like the way that Miller breaks this up into these really kind of bite-sized almost sections, so that if you're having some trouble, if you, you know, if you find yourself kind of glazing or, you know, glazing over or whatnot, you can take it really one section at a time. Again, feel free to ask questions. Maybe you've already skimmed through, or maybe you've already worked your way through the entire first chapter, but you feel like you missed some chunks, you want to go back and look at some sections again. I just want to, you know, kind of get this out there. I am going to be coming back with some short kind of bite-sized announcement or audio cast that will cover each of these individual sections. All right? So that's it for now. Have a good Saturday, everyone.